Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we link to our guest. We have links already to our guest on this program today. She's been on so many times that I was joking with her before we started that I'm going to have to make her a co-host. Emeritus or something along those lines. Today we have our return visit, and she's very prolific, let's put it that way, because she's a number of books out, conversations that we've had over the titles The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun of Growing Forever, The Fun of Living Together is our conversation today, along with other books like Liberating Jesus and My Thomas. And Roberta Grimes, I want to thank you for rejoining us here on the program today.
I'm so glad to be here, Richard. You're my favorite person to talk to, I have to say.
Oh, well, thank you. This is we're in our 10th year, as a matter of fact, of programs for Tell Me Your Story. And
yeah, it's great.
Amazing. I you know, at one point I thought, okay, let's see, the math would be, and that would be 520, I think, something like that. However, I've done a whole lot more than that are just sitting up on the website for people to listen to may or may not make it to the airwaves, but they are up on the website. So people can go there. There are several links to different things, to different interview pages, and we encourage people to go there. And again, I've run down the laundry list, as it were, of the titles that you have put together, that you have written. And of course, we're going to talk about your latest work, which is The Fun of Living Together. And that seems slightly, and this is where we're going to find out, it seems as though that's a little different than some of these others dealing with, folks who have passed on, and, you know, the fun of dying and the fun of staying in touch with those who have passed on, and growing forever as far as the fact that we are eternal, and so on and so forth. So give us a synopsis, if you will. Doesn't have to be in two sentences. You take 5 minutes for all that matters. We have plenty of time. Tell us about this fun of living together. In what context is that?
Well, the subtitle says it all, I think. Dr. King said, "We must learn to live together as brothers or perish together as fools." And anyone who looks around America today can see he had a point, and I'm trying to prevent it, obviously. I'm trying to call us to a higher standard of living, which is going to be better for all of us.
Well, I know that this whole issue regarding togetherness, if you will, it's a tough one for a lot of folks because of the polarizing atmosphere in this country in particular, but it seems to be almost like it's spreading.
It is spreading. Whatever we do, we lead the country, the nation and the world into doing. And that's, of course, dangerous because we're going in the wrong direction.
Well, I mean, you know, I know this is not going to set right with some folks, but I always had a real problem when I kept hearing our government, and this is going back 20, 30, 40 years, talk about exporting democracy, and I'm thinking, you don't know that those people want this.
And
based upon
the wrong thing, yeah, right?
And based upon my own experiences of a scant puff of smoke, 57 years on the planet, I'm not sure that I like the form that we've got right now.
You shouldn't like it, Richard. Yeah. What we're doing is creating a mess.
Yeah,
we have never for a day lived in the free and equal nation where everyone has a fair chance to rise that our founders dreamed for us and that Dr. King reminded us. We've never even tried. Time to try that. Never lived there.
Well, you know, that's one of the things that we talk about here on this program. We're looking for those new ways of living, obviously, because the ways that we're living now aren't working. Just look around. And everybody has their own perspectives. But obviously, you are talking about the fun of living together.
Yes.
and obviously we've already, I think, exhausted the angle that people are not having a lot of fun. So now how do we find that fun? And of course the subtitle, as you've already mentioned, we must learn to be to live together as brothers or perish together as fools, as you have already quoted. So how do we do that? What's the first step?
The first step is to understand that essentially there are two approaches to solving any problem. And to understand why that is, we need to understand the nature of consciousness, which scientists cannot tell you. And I can't really tell you either, but I can tell you some things about it. And Dr. Max Planck, who of course got the 1918 Nobel Prize as the father of quantum mechanics, had some great insights about consciousness. What we experience as human consciousness is the source energy that continuously manifests everything we think is real. And that source energy exists in a range of vibrations from the highest, which is perfect love, to the lowest, which is abject fear and all the other issue, you know, emotions around that surround fear. What we are doing as a nation now, and the reason we are so much off the rails, is we are thinking in all things from fear. Fear encompasses these related emotions like hatred and anger and envy and grief and everything bad that we try to avoid in our personal lives. But we swim in the sewer of these negative emotions because that's the level of thinking that is going on in this country. That's why we have such an extreme political difference over really trivial differences. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's insane that rather than try to solve the nation's problems, instead we're fighting with one another over really almost nothing. Yeah, we all want the same thing. We want a free and equal nation where everyone has a fair chance to rise. We want prosperity and health and security for our families and for our neighborhoods and for our country. We want all the same things. So let's come together and get those things. Mm-hmm. The reason we can't do it is we're thinking from fear. The solution put forth in The Fun of Living Together is thought from love. As a result, it doesn't look like what either political party would do.
And of course, it's not just politics, it's religion, it's economics, it's education, it's sexual orientation, whatever that means to you, because I'm still trying to understand all the terms. And it's so many different, every category of subject that you could put out, there are people on, best way to put it, are on opposite sides. It's not that they have differing views, they're on opposite sides. And someone made the comment, sadly they made the comment, they even connoted this, that what's going on in this country right now was going on in the mid-1800s that led to the Civil War, where more Americans died than in all of the wars combined since.
Right, that's right. And the Civil War accomplished nothing. It didn't even free the slaves.
No. Because it was said that I even saw a report just the other day that said, in light of that, that it was in some, it was either a state in the South or a community in the South that did not give the slaves their freedom until 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. And this had nothing to do with the lack of communication. It was there. They just figured as long as we don't tell them, they're not going to know. And so, you know, we've one of the interesting things that you bring up here, and I am really myself, and we're all trying to find that place where we belong in society, in the universe, in the country, especially when it comes to conversing. I mean, you know, we're not going to get into a conversation here about which is the better political party or which is the better religion or which is the better educational system or school. Or, I mean, I remember watching a documentary on education, and they talked about, for example, Harvard and Yale, you know, and they kept using these lofty words about prestigious education and I mean, high and lofty words to describe it. I'm going, who says? I mean, I've never been to Harvard or Yale. I haven't even set foot on the campus. So I have nothing to gauge it against. But who says you're going to get a better education at Harvard or Yale as opposed to Santa Barbara City College? You know, isn't it what you put into it, whether it's education or any of the other categories, that helps you to better understand who you are and where you are in the scheme of things? And where you want to be?
Well, I'd like to go back and address something you said quite a while ago.
Sure.
You were horrified that this community had not freed its slaves for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The United States to this day has not managed to end slavery. It
mm-hmm.
exists in
mm-hmm.
the United States today. It's in its third stage.
But it's not in the racial element specifically anymore.
Oh, specifically racial.
Oh, okay.
I'm amazed how few people really don't understand what's going on, But I have a dear friend who ended up being my co-author, and I didn't understand anything either until last year. I one day asked her an innocent question, and she told me the truth. And it's like a tugged string. When someone tells you a truth that is so foreign to you, you want to know more and you want to know more. And that's what ended up being this book we co-wrote.
Mm.
America is in its third stage of slavery. It looks different. We don't mm-hmm. think it's slavery. Where are the bullwhips? No, this doesn't look like slavery, but
right.
it's slavery. When people cannot get out of the fringes of American society, when children are born who have no hope of ever entering the American mainstream, that's slavery. Slavery with widescreen TVs, perhaps, but slavery all the same. And more than half of the descendants of chattel slavery in the United States still have to live like that.
And segregation is still very real, too. All you have to do is look at the various...
That's one of the symptoms.
Right, but I understand.
There's a core problem, and we've just been attacking symptoms. There were two people that I can find in all of American history for whom it was a personal problem. They understood it. They knew how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And because of a death in each case, they never were able to carry it through. The first is Thomas Jefferson. His wife died just as he was beginning to solve the problem. And the second is Dr. King. And of course, he never saw the age of 40. Had he lived, we would not be living this way today. We would already be in a colorblind nation.
Mm.
That's how easy this is to fix if you do the right things.
Yeah.
And we've never done the right things. Everything we've done has only made our problem worse.
I heard it said that as long as we continued, and this was in the past 8 years from 2008 to 16, as long as we continue to refer to Mr. Barack Obama as the first black president, we haven't come one inch from that concept of slavery.
Well, here's the problem. I really believe had he been actually descended from an African American, had his father been born here, he would not have become president.
Mm.
His father was an African.
Right.
In fact, there actually one of the Southern Democrats said at the time they wanted him to be the candidate because he was such a clean Negro.
Mm.
Clean of the history, you
Interesting.
See?
Interesting. Interesting.
We've been doing this evil dance
yeah.
for hundreds of years in this country, and it's going to end now. It's really easy to end, but people first have to understand what we're doing wrong. And nobody, I'm finding to my amazement, nobody really understands what the problem is even.
And that's going to be the first hurdle. I've been watching a few drama programs. I'm not really into them that much, but every so often they just happen to be on the TV. My wife enjoys them. I'm kind of fed up with the trauma drama television programs because there's plenty in real life to deal with. I don't need to be watching TV and try to figure out how to solve these problems. But it was interesting what happened. This one program that I was watching had to do with a virus that had basically wiped out a majority of the population on the planet. But we still had technology. And there's this vessel that's sailing the ocean blue. And it has come up with a vaccine, and it has been able to duplicate it, replicate it, what have you, mass produce it, and it's taking it around the world. It's taking it to different communities to try to, you know, to inoculate people. Well, they come to this one island, and the people on the island just attack them, to which, of course, they return fire, and the vessel's crew basically wipes out the entire small community except for the leader. And they put the leader in the brig on the ship, and they set sail again. And over the course of the next few days, they start to converse with the leader, who is just enraged. Because prior to their arrival, another ship had come with supposedly a vaccine, which ended up making a bunch of people really, really sick instead of curing them, right? Anyway, they began to dialogue, and the two sides began to soften to the point that they actually began to understand where the other one was coming from. They weren't making the other wrong. They were trying to genuinely understand where the other was coming from. They put down the fear and the anger and the emotion, and they actually joined forces to move forward. And I've seen several other programs with a similar kind of scenario where they stopped. They started talking. They realized, oh, I thought you were angry because, but really you're angry because of B. And it completely changed the entire dynamics of the dialogue and the communication and conversation. And they were able to work together. And I'm wondering about that aspect of it. I don't want to minimize the conversation we've just had in regards to this issue of slavery and racism in this country as it exists today, that is very real. But I would like to move on to this aspect of communication and understanding one another, rather than continuing this whole stupidity of act and react and react and react, because it's getting us nowhere.
What's getting us nowhere is that we have never solved the core problem that Thomas Jefferson figured out how to solve, that Dr. King figured out how to solve. You can't have a dialogue when there are bars between, and right now there are bars between. So we as white people can feel superior and say, well, we're going to start a dialogue and we'll talk to them. They can't even hear us because those bars are in the way. We put those bars there. We've got to take the bars down. This is the kind of thing that my friend, who, by the way, is upper middle class, her father has a PhD. She grew up wealthier than I did, but she has very dark skin.
Mm-hmm.
And she lives in the African-American community enough so she was able to tell me what it's really like. And then I did the research, and she's absolutely right, and we have to fix it. Before we can even begin to dialogue, we have to fix it. There are things we can do even now, though, to make it better. For example, we can easily, within a decade or so, eradicate racism. Eradicate it. Racism is a form of ignorance. That's all it is.
Yes.
And the way that we create another generation of racists is to keep raising black and white children during their download moment when they never even see anybody who doesn't look like them. What we're teaching them is your tribe, because we're very tribal, although we're not racist by nature, we're very tribal. There's a download period which starts when we're born and goes till maybe the age of 5 to 6. In that period, even they can tell by our brainwaves, we're taking it in. We're learning what reality is, who we are, and what our tribe is. And if all you ever see, and you're a little black child in America, and all you ever see is people, except on TV, of course, is people who have dark skin, and you see that people who have dark skin are inferior, you are going to believe for your entire life, no matter what happens later in your life, you're going to believe you're inferior. You're part of the lower class. On the other hand, if you're a white child and you grow up in a nice white suburb and you never see a real human being and get to know and play with a little child who has dark skin, you're going to be racist your entire life. You won't know why, and you'll just be uncomfortable around people who don't look like you because your tribe is white people. But the American tribe includes all colors, and that's a beautiful thing. So from this moment on, it's child abuse to teach your children that their tribe only looks like them. We've got to we inoculate our kids against every disease that they'll never get near. We've got to start inoculating them against this false notion that they can go on thinking that their tribe is only people who look like them. Their tribe is all of America. We had a neighbor when my kids were tiny. We built our house on 160 acres in Massachusetts, and right next door, the only people who lived near us were the Gregorys. Dick Lillian and their 10, I thought it was 10, but Wikipedia says 11. I still think it's 10. I think they got it wrong. Children. And so my children's first playmates when they were 3, 4, and 5 were little black children. Their first two babysitters had dark skin. We didn't think anything of it at the time. We didn't realize that we were inoculating our children against racism. Now, the oldest is 40. I have 3 children. Not only are they not racist, but I've tried to talk to them about this as I was working on the book. They don't even understand how anybody could be, because they know their tribe includes people with dark skin. It's for life. When we inoculate children against racism, there will be no more racism in America. It will be impossible for people to conceive of how anyone could be racist because people know better.
Well, I'm on board with you.
Ignorant we have been. We haven't done this basic thing to help to end this problem.
My first wife was totally blind. And her best friend from school was a young black boy. Now, she didn't even think anything of it. And I'm sure that in all of the reading that she did, I'm sure she read about, you know, the Huck Finn, and she read about the slavery in this country back hundreds, 200, 300, 400, 500 years, whatever. But no one had ever told her until she was, I think what she told me was like 14 or 15 years old. No one ever told her he was black.
That's great.
And, I mean, you talk about being colorblind, not only literally, but, you know, metaphorically. And I have to say, and I met him, and he is the nicest individual. I don't care what color he is. He's the nicest individual, and he was always so protective of her. Even when I came along, he was protective. You better treat her right. I was surprised that they didn't marry you. I thought that was rather interesting. I look at that and I think in terms of, now I'm thinking in terms of, for example, the hiring of individuals for jobs. And it bothers me to no end that men and women have such a, in this case of the sexes, men and women are not paid the same for the same job. I don't know how that's even possible if it's the same job. And so I thought, you know, the best way to hire someone, get a resume and only put a number on it, okay? Doesn't mean anything. It's just a number. And you base your decision on what's in that resume. And that's how you hire. And if it happens to be a woman, she gets the pay for that job. And if it's a man, he gets exactly the same pay for that job. Because I've never been able to understand the disparity. And then, of course, the same thing when it comes to race. Depends upon where your skin color is. No, you have a number on your resume, and that's how that's determined. As far as, for example, in this case, hiring for a job, we're not going to even look at you. We're only going to look at your resume. It's. I don't know. I guess
you understand why that would never help.
That would never help.
Tell me why. The male-female discrepancy is concerned. I can fully explain it. I've been basically a male job my entire career, and the discrepancy at this point comes from the fact that women look at their careers differently. And if a woman works as hard as a man and makes that the center of her life, yes, she certainly can make as much or more as a man does. To me, that's not the problem. You can't say to black people nowadays, okay, you're now on a level playing field as an adult. You go ahead and, you know, just give us your numbers and show us what you can do and it'll be colorblind. Too late. We rear the black children in this country to fail. 60 plus years after Brown versus Board of Education declared that it was unconstitutional to segregate American schools. Our schools are more segregated than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. And the schools that black children attend are dumbed down unbelievably. That's a fact. There was recently a standardized national test administered in 5 African-American or mostly African-American schools. Standardized test. Not a single student in any of those schools was graded proficient. To be proficient, you had to be 4 or 5. Most of them got a 1. Mm. Why? Why? It wasn't that they didn't spend enough money. They were spending $16,000 a year per child in those schools, and that's 4th highest in the country. We destroyed a healthy black culture and a healthy black family with the war on poverty. We did this. It started in 1965. For the past 50 years, we have essentially been keeping the African-American community, more than half of them, in economic slavery. Generation upon generation, and nobody seems to care. I care, and that's why I wrote that book, and I'm going to fix it. This is the cause of my life now. I didn't know about this a year ago, but I do now.
You should run for president.
Well, believe it or not, the present president has read my book.
Really?
So I'm going to say right now, he's read my book.
Okay.
One thing that Donald Trump is not is racist, and his record shows he's totally not racist. Mar-a-Lago is in an strictly segregated county. No Jews, no blacks, no can go anywhere. And when he bought Mar-a-Lago, he insisted on integrating it with both Jews and black people. He's really pretty colorblind from everything I've heard. And the fact that he's excited about my book tells you something, doesn't it?
Well, that's pretty impressive, to say the very least. It puts a whole different light. It seems, and I have to say that I have to take a look at what we've been discussing here on this program so far today and then the comments that I've made. And it seems as though, you know, I've, in spite of the fact that I think that I have well thought out and well reasoned positions in regards to trying to come up with solutions from what we've discussed so far, I've got a long way to go in one sense.
Every white person does. It's not our fault. It's the fault that we've been lulled because so many of our celebrities disproportionately black. But when you think further, they're either athletes, entertainers, clergymen, or politicians. To be a black man in America is to be a throwaway person unless you can be one of those things. Literally, a throwaway person. So it's little wonder that a third of them cycle in and out of prison. It's little wonder that they self-medicate with drugs. You would too. It's no wonder that the little boys are killing each other in America's streets now. Because they know they have the larger society doesn't want them, and because of the war on poverty, they are no longer really allowed to have families. What use are they to anybody, or even to themselves? More than almost half of them, and in the cities, more than half of them drop out of high school. They're failures from the get-go, and it's not their fault. I didn't know any of this either, Richard. But I think any American who cares about the future of our country, even if you don't care about black people, learn what happened with the war on poverty and how it destroyed the African-American culture. Because as somebody whose entire playlist consists of 50s and 60s doo-wop, I don't have to tell you that the black community leads our culture. They're way cooler than we are, going back to jazz. And what starts in the black community infects us all. There was a time when there were almost no white, in fact, it was in the 60s, almost no white children grew up without a father, only if maybe dad died. Nowadays, 25% do. Pretty soon it'll be 50%. And that started in the black community, but it's not their fault. That's what we did with the war on poverty. We broke up all those families. So 2/3 of black kids still grow up without a father, and many of them end up dying in the streets.
So here's a piece that, and you say that as a white male, it's not my fault. Okay. That does not abdicate my responsibility to my fellow man, regardless of skin color, that I need to find a way for all of us to be included in the totality of our civilization in all aspects.
That's right. Your job now is to learn. I've opened your mind, and I hope I've begun to open the minds of everybody listening. It's our job as Americans who live in this country. It's not our fault that this was done to the black people, but it is our fault that it continues to this day to be done. We've got to end that third tale of slavery, end it and make a fully equal nation, which was our founder's dream and which was Dr. King's dream. And we can do it. It won't even be that hard. I talk about it in the fun of living together. It won't be hard and it will be fun. But we first have to understand what we have wrought in the black community. Right. It was just like an atomic bomb exploded in the black community in 1965. And now you're thinking, why? Why was it so bad there? Because it didn't hurt white people? No. What you have to understand is that slavery still existed in 1965. If you don't believe that, read Letter from Birmingham Jail. Dr. King was a brilliant young man with a PhD when he wrote it in 1963. And yet you can see from what he wrote that he was as much enslaved in America as he had his ancestors been in 1863. What happened right after the Civil War is we did nothing to take care of the black people, educate them, empower them, say, hey, you're a citizen, here's a flag. We did nothing for them. We went home. We didn't even give them basic physical protections. So they were immediately re-enslaved. We call it Jim Crow, but really it was slavery without individual ownership. And it went on for almost 100 years in America. So when the civil rights movement came along, they were freeing the slaves at that point, finally, 100 years after the Civil War. And they did it very well. The trouble was that in order to stop that, the federal government instituted the War on Poverty in 1965 and took the wind right out of the sails of the civil rights movement. And here's where we are now. So we have an underclass of people because their skin is dark. They cannot get anywhere in America. That's just a fact.
There would be those who would take a look, since you mentioned this present administration, they would take a look at the present administration's cabinet makeup, let alone Congress, that is made up of a majority of white males. And in his cabinet, white males plus one white female. I believe there is one black man, Mr. Carson, Ben Carson, who's the only black man in that group. That does not... because of your, you know, again, your observations, your experiences with Mr. Trump, the fact that he has read your book and so forth.
I don't know him, by the way. I've never
met him. I know. I understand. But in terms of your observations, you're saying that he is not a racist. Okay.
He's not a racist. It's racist for someone to pick a multicolored cabinet and dumb down the requirements, because there are very few black people in this country who have been allowed to rise enough to be cabinet quality.
And again, we need
people are kids. They're okay. Little children.
Right.
There has never been a time in America when black children were able to compete on a level playing field intellectually. You saw what happened when we started to let black people compete, you know, athletically. Who's
right.
Your favorite athlete now?
Right, exactly.
The same is true of little black girls and little black boys who are growing up in America and never given a decent education. Of course they can't compete.
Yeah.
Of course they can't. I'm glad that he is choosing the best people, and I'm glad that he is trying to do what's right, but tokenism doesn't help. More than half of black people in this country still live on the margins of our society. This is, by the way, this is what Thomas Jefferson most feared. He didn't realize that it was going to be harder to free the slaves when they looked so different from the masters, because this is historically very aberrant. It was, this kind of slavery has been unusual in history. Mm-hmm. He didn't realize it until he got to Philadelphia for the Congress of the Colonies, Continental Congress, we call it, and he saw what was happening in Philadelphia. Philadelphia was starting to look the way America still looks. There was a separate, desperate underclass of black people with no access to the white society and no way ever to be part of the white society. We live with that now. And because of tokenism, because we put a black person here, a black person there, we don't understand that underneath that little veneer of perceived equality, there is this disastrous boil of racism and keeping people down for generations upon generations. That's what we've got to lance that boil. We've got to look ourselves in the eye and say, we're going to get to the bottom of this. It's not going to be pleasant, but we are going to come out of it a much stronger nation, and everybody is going to be equal in opportunity in this country. Every child deserves the best possible education. They're going to get that education now. That's how you start it. Tokenism doesn't help.
So, okay. And again, I am trying to wrap my brain around all of this, which I've never really thought about that seriously before. And hey, it's time.
I just happen to have a friend who enlightened me. This book is meant to enlighten us all. It's not our fault. And another kind of stupid tokenism is for people to say, well, if you're white, you have privilege. That's just nonsense. Let's fix the problem for the black people in this country.
Yeah, but
then nobody will worry about privilege. We'll all be privileged.
But it's not just, can we broaden that to say people of color? It's not just the blacks?
I don't know what it means, people of color.
People of color, Hispanics. Asian.
I live in Texas.
Yeah.
Texas is a third black, a third white, and a third Hispanic. My next door neighbor in my very upscale community is a successful Hispanic family, second generation. You know, in Texas, we love Hispanics. I think they should put out a million more visas for Hispanics. They work hard and they're wonderful, honest people, and they're lovely to know. They don't need this. They haven't been kept down in this country for 400 years.
But being kept down, period, doesn't matter how many years have gone by. Isn't that just...
We have been giving preference to later immigrants all along.
All right. I'm trying to understand all this.
We wronged, and that's the black people. Right. We've wronged them, and we wrong them today.
Okay. And I'm trying to understand this, just like everyone else who's listening is trying to understand this, so that we have a better understanding of where we are and where we want to go, where we need to go as a country, because, you know, at the rate we're going, there's not going to be one left.
That's a very good observation, Richard. That's why this is so important to talk about.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. We're talking with Roberta Grimes. Her co-author is Kelly Glover. No relation to the actor?
I don't think so. I've never asked her that question.
Okay. It's called The Fun of Living Together. And, of course, the subtitle is a quote from Dr. Martin Luther King. We must learn to live together as brothers or perish together as fools. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, and we encourage you to stay right where you are.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, along with Roberta Grimes, and we're talking about the fun of living together. You know, Roberta, it's what's interesting for me is that I have basically two analogies that they don't even discuss this concept. But the first one has to do with the fact that there is a lifeboat that will hold 7.5 billion people. However, the only prerequisite is that you have to be willing to let go of the old ways of doing things, because we're not taking those with us. And the second analogy has to do with the fact that I'm sure that there are sufficient number of planets in the universe for each one of us to occupy one of these planets solo. But the reality is we're all here, all 7.5, almost 8 billion people. Which leads me to think that, yeah, we're supposed to live here together. And if we can do it and have fun, how much better that? How much better would that be?
That's right. That's right.
So we need to find a way to make it. And you know what? Every time I open my mouth to say something to you, I feel as though I'm gonna get a backlash. But I'm willing to take that.
I'm so sorry.
No. I don't feel punished. I don't feel corrected or punished. But it's like, okay, this is the part of the learning process for me, and I am not taking it personally from the standpoint of, oh, she's attacking me. No, I take it personally from the point of view of, you know what? I need to open up my eyes a little bit more than they have been to understand this. But we are specifically speaking about the enslavement of Africans who were brought over to this country 400 or 500 years ago. And of course, it wasn't just this country that was taking slaves to their countries. But
no, it was what happened in the 1600s was that. This was like a vogue, a fashion, because the slave trade on the African continent was rampant. It was black people enslaving black people, and they found they could export them. And people from Great Britain and Spain bought them because they could sell them again in this country. And not just, well, before we were a country, not just here, but all along the East Coast of the Western Hemisphere and in the islands, they were selling black slaves. People need to understand that slavery is probably our oldest human institution. It has always existed on every continent. Every person listening is descended from people who were at one time held in chattel slavery somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference has been virtually always the slaves looked pretty much like the masters. There wasn't a lot of difference. So when you wanted to free, you know, slaves and end slavery anywhere, it was easy. You just freed them. And then within a generation or so, everyone was blended together again. The horror of what was done here was that what was imported to America, to the Americas, was an aberrant kind of slavery where the slaves looked so different from the masters, you couldn't just free them. That you couldn't end slavery that way. There was no way they would ever blend together. And we still suffer today from that stupid decision to import people here as slaves who look different from the masters. If that had never happened, we wouldn't have racism, because the people who had come here from the African continent, eventually they would have come, and just like anybody else, would have accepted them because they're equals, right? They didn't come in chains. But the fact that we brought people here in chains, we didn't, the British did, was that Jefferson was furious when he realized when he got to Philadelphia that it was not going to be so easy to end slavery, which is what he was trying to do when he was very young. He was so upset that the first draft of our Declaration of Independence is full of ranting about the slave trade. John Adams called it Jefferson's philippic against the slave trade, and they cut nearly all of it out. But this was a big problem. We suffer 400 years later from this problem. And not understanding that that's what's wrong has made us throw half-baked ideas and ill-thought-out solutions and made it all worse. So the past 50 years, we have caused so much harm. We have so much made it harder to fix this problem only because we were being so short-sighted and we never tried to understand what the problem really was.
It certainly can seem rather daunting to the observer in that regard, that it seems, well, it's been going on for over 400 years, nearly 500 years in this country alone. There's no way. I mean, this is so institutionalized. We can't, it would be like trying to fill in the Grand Canyon.
It's going to be easy to fix. We just have to be fixing the right problem. The only two people in American history for whom this was personal, who knew what the problem was, who knew how to fix it, and who were smart enough and had enough charisma to actually get it done, only two people in all of American history that I have found, Thomas Jefferson and Dr. King.
Okay.
If Martha Jefferson had lived, we would not have this problem. She died just as he was beginning this project, and he took off in a different life. He was never the same man afterward.
Hmm.
If Dr. King had lived a normal life, we wouldn't have this problem now, because this would have been much easier to fix in the early 60s before the war on poverty made it so much worse.
It seems kind of sad that this has gone on as long as it has. We're talking about, one of the things that I was sharing with someone not too long ago was this, and it actually had to do more with sexual orientation than anything else. You know, first of all, I was sharing some different thoughts with them, but the one thing that came to mind was this: your sexual orientation aside, and in this case, as you and I are conversing here, your color, skin color aside, you are an American. End of story. You're an American, okay?
Right.
That's where it begins and ends. It doesn't matter how tall you are, what sex you are, what color you are, what your orientation is, what your political affiliations are, what your religious proclivities are, you know, what philosophy you choose to follow, et cetera, on infinitum. You are an American, whether you were born here or naturalized, okay? You're an American.
Yep.
And there are those who then would hang their hat on that and say, so what, Roberta, they're an American. What is the problem? And that's, I think, where the problem begins, is that they're not willing to take a look at it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. As both of them understood, both Jefferson and Dr. King understood, the problem is ignorance. We fix ignorance. And we don't, one of the many things people do that's stupid is to see someone who is ignorant, someone who's maybe says some of the things you've said, and then says, he's a racist. Whenever you call someone a racist, you create a racist who could have been taught to think differently. It's very easy to change people's perspective on race. Until you start demonizing them, when you do that, you create a racist for life. So from now on in this country, we never say the R word, just as we never say the N word. They are both equally evil if what we're trying to do is end the problem that African Americans still have here. We've just got to think in terms of love. The way to solve this is to think from love, and it's going to be not that hard to solve. You'll be amazed to see.
So,
love is where it begins.
All right. So if love is where it begins, and we want to solve this, I would be hard-pressed to believe that anybody would not want to solve this. Especially if they call themselves, they choose to take on that moniker that I rather strongly emphasized just a moment ago. If they are a real American, if I can, you know, be that bold and or blunt, if they're a real American, they'd want to solve this problem. They would want to adhere to the constitutional edict, if you will, that all men, and the word all meaning all inclusive, every single person, not just male, all men are created equal, period. All human beings. Maybe that needs to be rewritten a little bit to say all human beings are created equal.
The word men encompasses women. It did in the 18th century, for sure.
Yeah. And I have to say that here's a paradox I can't quite get wrap my brain around. During the last election cycle, I kept hearing conversations on the news media about voter laws. Okay, and I know I've learned since that every state has its own set of laws that governs the voting process. But then I started hearing about this construct of voters' rights. And I'm going, what voters' rights? In the Constitution, white men have always had the right to vote. Women got the right to vote in the early 1900s. And everybody got the right to vote since the 20th century. Okay, so how is it possible that anybody can be left out of the process?
They aren't.
And yet I was.
Citizen,
that's what I was
have
hearing.
Right to vote, and I've looked at this somewhat, mm-hmm. and what the issue is. Mm-hmm. And I hate to say this, but I don't think there is suppression of people who are citizens. Apparently, several million non-citizens voted, and apparently there are some people who think that's a good thing, and so they're trying to help to keep us from looking at that. I don't know. We have to be a nation of laws, or nobody's safe.
True.
And if we want to change the law so that you don't have to be a citizen to vote, try. That would be great to try, just as people don't like now suddenly the Electoral College. I happen to like it because I think it makes things, it allows all positions to be discussed, which I think is important. But if you don't like, then change it.
Change it, yeah.
But if something is the law, we've got to enforce the law, or we are not a nation of laws and nobody is safe.
And just a sidebar on the Electoral College, I remember somebody telling me that, well, if we did away with the Electoral College, then the candidates would focus on the states with the most people. I said, what do you think they do now? They focus on the states with the most electoral votes.
Here's the thing that's a rub for them. Trump ignored the states, primarily New York and California, that have a large population, but they're nearly everybody there is a Democrat. Why should he have bothered to campaign there? One of the things that people who say that Hillary, and by the way, I'm not political. I don't have a party, but I just, you know, I'm an observer, as are you.
Exactly.
But one of the things people say is, well, she got 3 million more votes. I lived most of my life in Massachusetts. I voted in local elections. There was no way that I could vote in a national election and think my vote would matter if I was going to vote for a Republican. You mm-hmm. couldn't. It mm-hmm. was impossible.
Right.
So my hunch is that if they somehow made it so that everybody's vote would count nationally, I think that you'd have found that Trump would have gotten more votes as well, just Raleigh, because a lot of people stayed home in both New York and California, and we can, you know, because they knew she was going to win there anyway, and we've, I think, come to see since that she really was not a very strong candidate, period. It would have been difficult for her to win under any circumstances.
Well, regardless of who did win or who would have won, the fact of the matter is this where we are today, and the fact is that everybody wants to feel included, wants to feel, if it's disenfranchised when you don't feel included, then it's franchised when you do feel included, I guess. But that is one of the key, to me, one of the core elements of community is feeling like you belong, being accepted. I became a member of the Baha'i Faith back in the mid-90s, and I was that for a year and a half. And at the end of that year and a half, I was unwilling to take the final step of belief, right? Because I began to realize that from my perspective, I had joined under false pretenses. And those false pretenses were I was looking for a group that would accept me, that would draw me in. And I realized I can't become a member of this faith under those pretenses. I'm not willing to make the final step of faith that supposedly everybody has because I was just looking for a group to belong to. And that's not the reason to join. Okay?
Yes.
And they graciously said, your name will be taken off of the mailing list and you may come back anytime you like. And we thank you. Unlike the Catholic Church, when I took my letter of resignation, so to speak, to the rectory, they said, we'll put it in your file. To which I said, you and the FBI? Okay. But it's one of those things where we want to feel included in our own families, in our own neighborhoods, where we work, where we shop, etc. I mean, I love living in Santa Barbara because it's such a small town. I'm going to run into people who I've associated with in business or, in different capacities as I've traveled the roads and gone to different things and gone to shows and movies and, you know, and just walked around. I mean, I have people that I've never actually said hello to, but we've seen each other time and time again. And they will say, hey, I like your hat, or hey, good day to you, or whatever the case might be. And that feels so good. But when you are left out, and sometimes not just left, you're ignored. You're ignored to the extent that you don't even exist. And it sounds to me like that is an element of what you're talking about as well, that we are not inclusive in that regard. And I'm not minimizing your point that this is a very simple thing to deal with and to resolve. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are on that as far as the aspect of feeling a part of the community.
Yeah, they don't. And I'm talking about over half of African-Americans in this country. We know there are some very successful, high-profile ones, mm-hmm. and they have been very lucky, and they've worked very hard, and you shouldn't have to have that kind of luck or work that hard just to be a normal American, but they have done it. Kelly is an upper middle class American because her father was one of the most remarkable people I've ever met. Nothing got him down. He was going to bull his way into a middle class life in America, and he succeeded. He became very successful. But you can count on the fingers of one hand almost the number of Black men who have been able to do that who were not either entertainers, athletes, ministers, or politicians. What's true about America and is shocking is the fact that there has never been a day, never been a moment when the African-American community as a whole has been welcomed into American society. My ancestors came over in the 20th century. They all got to raise their hand and someone said, you are a full American citizen. Here's a flag. That day has never happened to this day for African-Americans in this country. We have treated them like barnacles on our ship of state. They've always been here. We've got to deal with them. But we've dealt with them as little as we could to keep them from causing us any trouble. We don't want them to impede our forward motion. There's never, ever been a time we've invited them into the boat. That's just a fact. And because that's a fact, they don't feel welcome here. One of the reasons they stay in their own communities is at least they feel welcome among others who look like themselves. Remember, mm-hmm. they mm-hmm. during the imprint period when they were 3, 4, 5 years old, they never saw a white person. Their tribe doesn't include white people in many cases. And it's too late, really, to fix that for the generation that's going along now, except we might consider inviting them into the boat and handing them a flag and telling them we love them. And the great opportunity for that is coming up, because next year is the 50th anniversary of Dr. King's assassination. We now know he was the greatest American of the 20th century. There's nobody in close second place. And it's time to say that. Mm. It's time to say this is our icon going forward. I don't care what our skin color is. This is the example we hold and the leader we have going through this century. Then in 2019, we have a very big anniversary, because that's the 400th anniversary, according to most historians, of black chattel slavery in the United States. Mm. Why don't we call that our Jubilee year? And why don't we invite them all into the boat?
Yeah.
Why don't we do that?
Although, forgive me not to be flippant here, but maybe we should find a different analogy, because that's how they came over here. But nonetheless, your point is very well taken. And I encourage people to pick up a copy of your book. I think it's a very important, The Fun of Living Together. That is why we're all here, to live together. And we can have fun doing so if we will just start working on understanding where we are in this whole picture. Pick up a copy at certainly your website, Roberta, as well as some of the other books that she's written, The Fun of Dying, The Fun of Staying in Touch, The Fun, as I said, of Growing Together, The Fun of Living Together, I beg your pardon, that's The Fun of Growing Forever, Liberating Jesus, and My Thomas. This is extraordinary. I mean, what is this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You must have more than 6 books out.
Oh, yeah, I do. I mean, there are some novels.
Yeah.
And the next, and there's a children's book that will be out this year.
Oh, wonderful.
And the next fun book after The Fun of Living Together is called The Fun of Loving Jesus, and that will be out this year as well.
However, that is not coming from a specific religious perspective or philosophy.
Quite the contrary. Jesus didn't come to start a religion. That's very clear if anybody actually reads the Gospels with an open mind. And The Fun of Loving Jesus is about what it is he intended to do and how we can now do it. It's called The Way. Mm-hmm. His earliest followers called his teachings The Way. And Jesus said, if you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.
Absolutely.
It's time for us to be set free. It's time for us to come to Jesus as what he intended us to come to Jesus, mm-hmm. which is students. Because he can teach us how to live a better life. Many people who have read Liberating Jesus have said, okay, we get Christianity is wrong. What are we supposed to do? And The Fun of Loving Jesus is going to be about what Jesus would want us to do. Based on what he said.
I joke with people and I say that I have no intention of being a Christian because Jesus wasn't a Christian. He was a Jew.
It was taught. It would not be today. It's for sure. No, I'm not a Christian either. I'm a follower of Jesus. Yeah. I don't think it's possible to be both. I'm sad to say that.
I think that they're mutually exclusive.
Yeah,
I really do.
They are.
I really do. As a matter of fact, and I'm sure that you have had conversations with folks who have basically, you've had some backlash on this conversation, especially from a biblical standpoint, because the people, I grew up in broadcasting in a Christian radio station for 15 years. I heard pretty much all of it. I heard it all. And
no,
they would throw Bible passages up that would justify enslaving
well,
certain
that's it.
Races.
If you pick and choose, you can find anything. I have read the Bible. This is how much of a masochist I am.
Uh-huh.
I have read the entire Christian Bible cover to cover at least 6 times, maybe as close, maybe 8.
I
wasn't counting when I was doing it, but I started when I was in my mid-teens and didn't stop till I was in my 50s. I've read it over and over, and I have read the New Testament. I would read the whole of the Old Testament, then I'd double down. I'd read the New Testament twice because I hated the Old Testament, most of it. Then I went back, Genesis, Exodus. I started over again. I did that over and over again. So I'm happy to talk Bible to any Christian. Whatever you quote to me, I'm happy to talk about it.
But how have you been received on this specific subject regarding The Fun of Living Together?
People have loved the book because it doesn't say anything that's bad about Christianity. Living Together. People have loved the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I haven't had any backlash on it. There has been a little of what you're talking about, which is, I didn't know this was going on. Gee, we better fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I have to tell you, I was in my early teens when the civil rights movement was at its height. I had no idea this was going on in America. No idea. The fire hoses and the police dogs and people in their Sunday best being beaten down, seeing that every night on TV. I had no idea. Most people in the North had no idea. And I think this book is hitting people very much as those TV broadcasts used to hit us. We didn't know. But now that we know, let's fix this for once and for all, which we can do.
Yeah.
Won't even be that hard.
I love the dedication. This book is dedicated to every child whose ancestors were held in American slavery. Dear, beautiful lights of tomorrow, your time has come. And to that, here's something to mull over, folks. And Roberta, I'd like your comment on this. There was a wonderful one-act play, a one-man play, Give 'Em Hell, Harry. James Whitmore portrayed him. And I actually have that audio on my phone. I loved it. It was actually played on the night of Jimmy Carter's inauguration back in 1976. Anyway, there's a bit where he's walking with the press. He's walking with the press. And some reporter said something. We don't know exactly what he said. But the response by Truman was, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What did you say? What did you say? Let me tell you something. If there's going to be a black man in the gutter, there has to be a white man to keep him there. Which means that, in essence, sure, they're both enslaved.
That's right. That's right. Yes, we are enslaved by our delusions. We're enslaved by the misunderstandings.
Yeah.
But there's nothing to be afraid of in integrating this country. Black people and white people are identical in every way. And when we allow black children intellectually with white children, you're going to find they're every bit as smart, just as they were every bit as strong when we let them compete athletically. Yeah. We've just never done it. What we're going to do is enrich this country so much when we finally finish freeing the slaves. Yeah. Because we've been keeping 10% perhaps of our population unproductive. It costs a lot of money to keep men in jail, and a third of men, black men, cycle in and out of jail. 40% of our prison population at any given time, male prison population, is African American. That won't happen anymore.
Yeah.
We've spent more than our entire national debt, several trillions more, on the war on poverty.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been doubling down on stupid for a long time.
When
we stop that and we allow these people to be productive, you're going to see a boom in this country economically like we have never seen. So this is all good news that we're going to fix this now, even if people are not sure they want to integrate. That's up to you.
Yeah.
But we've got to be giving everybody in this, as you said beautifully, we've got to give everybody the opportunity to be full and free Americans, and that's going to enrich everyone.
When it comes to combat, and it doesn't matter what era, I mean, we can go back thousands of years, when there is the loss of life, the one thing that always springs to my mind is, oh my God, what lost potential. What are the contributions these individuals could have made and never will? Well, now we have a group of people in our country. They are alive, they are living and breathing, and I'm not even sure how to phrase this. If they are given the opportunity and take advantage of it to progress in our society like everybody else, imagine the incredible potential, as you just iterated, in regards to their contributions to our civilization.
Yes. Gloriously put. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
It stuns me. It's like we've been all this time, we've been trying to succeed this country, and we've had a hand tied behind our back.
Yeah.
When we're all working and we're all succeeding and everybody is part of our one glorious fabric that is America, we are going to be greater by far than we ever have been.
Give us your website so people can get more information about you and the work that you're doing.
RobertaGrimes.com. And if you would like to talk to me, just send a contact through the website, RobertaGrimes.com. I do answer emails. I used to say, if you don't hear in 24 hours, send flowers, but sometimes it's 3 days. I get a lot of emails.
I'd be a little worried about the whole flowers thing. Because it's like, is she still alive? I hope so. I wanted to hear from her. But I am very grateful for you and the work that you're doing. I think that what you're offering to our community, and when I say community, I'm talking about everybody that's listening, our entire country. And I know that this is a global problem. In each nation, there's this issue. However, we're here in America, in the United States. We've got to deal with this specific issue. I don't know about you, Roberta, but my observations are that an Old Testament biblical passage says the way that a child is raised is the way that he will go. And when I think about a nation being birthed, we were not only birthed, but our early years were in violence. And it's time to change that, because we're doing violence to our own citizens, both literally as well as figuratively. And I'm hoping that we can change that karma, if you will.
We can, and it begins now.
Yeah. Well, now is the time for us to wrap up the program. Again, thank you so much for all your time. Again, the book is entitled The Fun of Growing Together, folks. Roberta Grimes, again, thank you so much for joining us.
It's the fun of living together.
Oh, my.
We hope then we can grow, but we've got to first start living together as one people, and that begins now.
And it's growing forever and living together.
Yes, I'm sorry. I get confused too sometimes.
I can't thank you so much. It's a lot of fun.
Richard, I'm so glad to talk to you. I'd love to talk to you whenever, ever we get to talk.
Well, when your next work comes out, then we will talk again, I guarantee you. And our listeners will be there to listen and contact you through robertagrimes.com. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to love.